coming up.
Good. Okay. Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Today I'm going to draw your attention to, bring your attention to West Africa, and in particular Ghana. And I'd like to present some early results on an evaluation we've conducted looking at the effects of national health insurance in this country. First, I'd just like to acknowledge some of my colleagues at APT who have been instrumental in helping with this work. Also, our colleagues at the Ghana Health Service in the Health Research Unit who have also been major contributors to this work. And finally, of course, our funders at USAID as well. I'm just going to provide a little bit of background of health financing in Ghana. This is very relevant to the whole discussion of health health sector reform. At independence in Ghana, public health services at first were free, and then in the 1970s, the government had to introduce some nominal fees due to insufficient budgets to cover the healthcare costs. And in the 1980s, these turned into more significant user fees, which were referred to as cash and carry. And one of the outcomes of this is that it really restricted access to healthcare, particularly among the poor. So, and in Ghana and other West African countries, community health insurance schemes began emerging in the 1990s, and these were sort of prepayment schemes with the goal of reducing out-of-pocket payments at the service delivery sites, and charged very modest premiums. And while these schemes were really growing in popularity, reaching over more than 150 in Ghana by 2002, they only covered 1% of the population. So that still left a lot of the population without any access to health care. So the government of Ghana in 2003 passed legislation to implementing national health insurance, and it mandates district level or district managed health insurance schemes that are in accordance with national guidelines. And the goal really was to reach equitable and universal access to healthcare services for the entire population. The financing for this includes a 2.5% levy on most goods and services in the country, and also the same percentage of taken from Social Security contributions of formal employees, and also then annual premiums. And the coverage of this, the coverage as of December, which is the latest data that I have, is that 42% of the population is actually insured. Another 55% are registered, and that means they've paid their premium, but they're waiting for their actual ID card, which can take up to 6 months. Just a little bit briefly about what the health insurance provides. Or what it is. The basic structure as it was originally set up was required adults to pay a minimum premium of about 72,000 CDs, which equated to about $9 US at the time. And the idea was that both parents in a household would enroll and pay the premium, and then all of their children would be covered. And there were some exemptions for the elderly and also for the indigent. And the package is a pretty comprehensive package of services that includes inpatient, outpatient, drugs, maternity care, and emergency care as well. There are just a few exclusions. Interestingly enough, family planning was not covered in the benefit structure or in the benefit package because it was considered one of the services that was considered a public health good and was intended to be provided free of charge at public health clinics, although this hasn't borne out in reality. So basically, the objectives of this study were really to examine the changes in enrollment over time, starting from implementation into 2007, and then to determine the effects of enrollment both on healthcare utilization and also on out-of-pocket expenditures. Now, the results are really intended for use by the government of Ghana to know sort of what are the impacts of national health insurance and to provide feedback on any areas such as operations of the actual scheme in terms of getting people enrolled, getting cards out to people, that kind of thing, and just feeding back into, you know, any potential changes that they might want to make it an even more effective program. But this also might be of interest to other countries that are considering national health insurance to kind of learn some of the lessons from the Ghana experience. The methodology for the study was we did cross-sectional surveys. We did a baseline in 2004 and a follow-up survey in 2007. We did household surveys in two districts, in Carranza and Ofinso, and we did patient exit interviews in an additional four districts. The selection of the districts was done in consultation with district health management team directors from several districts in Ghana, and the criteria was basically whether or not there was an existing community-based health insurance program, of which there was one in Nkuranza, and also looking at the relative economic status of the districts. And so we selected from deprived and less deprived districts, and so we came up with the districts in that sense. And these districts do roughly represent most of the regions in the country, so there is some representation there. We also did in-depth interviews with the district scheme managers at NLINE to really find out more about sort of the operations and the rolling out of the insurance in their particular district and any difficulties they've encountered, and also service statistics at two points in time for the district health facilities. The analysis that we've done is we've kind of looked at we've approached the analysis in two ways. One, a more larger sort of policy impacts of national health insurance, and this was we basically use pre-post comparisons of the overall population at baseline and at end line to look at changes in overall coverage, utilization, and expenditures. And then to look more at the individual insurance effects, we did propensity score matching to look at the impact of insurance of these outcomes, and also to try in an attempt to reduce the selection bias, because we weren't able to have a control group in this case because it's national health insurance, it covers the entire country. So this is a way to determine the predicted probability of enrollment based on some observed predictors of insurance enrollment. Just briefly, this slide provides some of the sample characteristics. The key things to know is that we sampled about 1,800. And also I just should mention that in the interest of time, there's a lot of data, and I'm going to just focus today on curative care, and this is for these are for household respondents who were ill in the last 2 weeks, and then I'm also going to focus on maternal health care seeking, and these are for women who delivered in the past 1 year. And I'm just going to focus on the household data and pull in some of the information from the district scheme managers for today. So this just provides the overall sample information. In the two districts, we sampled about 1,800 households in the baseline and 2,500 in the follow-up study. And this just sort of gives you a breakdown. And we wanted to get roughly equal samples of insured and uninsured so we would be able to do some comparisons. So that's why the samples are relatively equal. And I'm first going to present results based on the pre-post-test results. So these, again, are looking at overall policy impacts on the population, not teasing out between uninsured and insured yet. And in terms of wealth, what we can see here is that overall there's an increase in wealth status from the baseline to end line. And you can see we created a wealth index, and quintile 5 would be the richest households. Quintile 1 are the poorest households. And the main thing to look at here is that in baseline, whereas you see, I think it's about 33% of the population falls into the poorest category, that corresponds to only 20% in the end line. And so we did this by pooling. We combined data from baseline and end line, and we did a pooled wealth index to get at this. So overall, we can see that wealth status is improving in Ghana. And all the results I'm presenting today are significant, just to throw that out. So the next result we're looking at is it just in enrollment. And so the two bars on the left are showing who was for households, and that by that the proxy is for head of households, the percentage that were enrolled in insurance at baseline, which was 25%, and this grew to 46% in the follow-on survey. And then for individuals in the household, it's slightly lower percentages, 23% at the baseline, growing to about 39% at the end line. The reason why these figures aren't exact, aren't the same, is that, well, the insurance was intended for an entire family to be covered. What we are finding is there's some evidence where the head of household is insured, but not everyone in the household is also insured. And that could be a case where you had maybe a grandfather is a head of household and his grandchildren may not be insured because their parents didn't insure. And in terms of actual care seeking, again, this is just comparing the total populations at baseline and end line. We can see a big drop in the percentage of people who had been ill in the past 2 weeks in self-treatment or going to a traditional healer. That dropped from 75% to 44% over the study period, and a big increase in seeking care from a formal healthcare facility from 37% to 72%. And in looking at the maternal care-seeking results, we actually don't see a lot of changes, again, when just looking at population, overall population at the baseline and end line. So you can see antenatal care is very high in general, so it wasn't there wasn't a lot of room to improve upon that. Home deliveries did not go down, and that is something that you might have expected to see in general. And then cesarean deliveries stayed about the same at about 7%. And one thing I'll note, too, just to build on Mai's presentation, we did collect information about which sector people were going to get their care. And one thing that might be a bit of a concern is that it looks like there's, for both curative care and for maternal care, there is a decrease in seeking services from the private sector. And one of the reasons for this might be because this was a very, this was definitely a public sector initiative and initially didn't really include the private sector, although there were provisions that, the government could contract with the private sector. And the process for private providers to become part of the system is that they have to be, get accredited. And I think there was a bit of a delay in that process, but that has started. And so we might see some changes if we were to do this survey in another year or so. Okay. And finally, when we're looking at expenditures, this is where we do see significant decreases in expenditures comparing just baseline population to end line. And each of these are for curative care seeking, for antenatal care, and for delivery. And this is also, this is adjusting for inflation to between the baseline and the end line. So now I'll turn to looking a little bit more closely at the follow-on survey, which was most recently conducted just last fall. And one thing I'll point out is we used, we did a regression to look at sort of what are the predictors of enrolling in insurance. And at the baseline, which is the left-hand column, those were the, these were the sort of key predictors of insurance. So we did the same model for end line, and it and you can see that some of the predictors fell out. Like female-headed households was a predictor of enrollment at baseline, but not at the end line. Some of the other things, such as wealth, did still show up. And then what we did is we did a new model looking at the end line data, and this is based on some lessons learned that we had done. PHR Plus had done some additional studies looking at this in Senegal and Mali and had found some other interesting things that were predicting insurance. So we added these questions in our follow-up survey, and then we found, in fact, that membership in a community solidarity organization increased likelihood of enrolling, as well as membership of being in the Akan ethnic group. And interestingly enough, we didn't include ethnicity in the baseline because our counterparts thought it wasn't going to be, you know, relevant, but in fact it did turn out to be relevant. And the interesting thing here is that the president is Akan, and the National Health Insurance program was actually his program. And so there seems to be some relationship between your ethnicity and enrolling in the insurance. And also, people with a chronic health condition were more likely to insure, which you might expect. So finally, I'm going to just turn to the propensity score matching results. And here, what we're looking at is in just the N-line data, we're doing comparisons between insured and uninsured. And in effect, we're trying to do create a control group to look at what are the true effects of insurance at the individual level. So the first bar shows the difference unadjusted, and then the second bar, the blue bar, shows the adjusted using propensity score matching. And all of these results that I'm presenting are significant. So in self-treatment, the difference between, there was a 27 percentage point difference, and in this case, it was uninsured were more likely to self-treat. And that pretty much held true, that difference held true even adjusting for selection bias. And then for formal care, it's the inverse. And in formal care, it was the insured that were more significantly more likely to seek care from a formal facility. And again, this held true once we adjusted for selection bias. And this is looking at maternity care. And whereas we didn't see a lot of significant differences just looking at general population baseline to end line, when we're really focusing at the impacts of being insured versus uninsured, it's hard to kind of see it in the ANC visits, but it actually is a, what this is that insured women received 1.43 more ANC visits than did uninsured. And that that difference held once we controlled for selection bias as well. And also, insured women were significantly more likely to deliver at a facility. Although with that model, we're still kind of looking at that. That is a somewhat less significant finding. We also did find that insured women were more likely to be hospitalized as part of their delivery as well. There are a lot of other really interesting results. I can't share all of them today, but. I think cesarean delivery was actually also, there was a higher percent of that associated with being insured. And we did find, as you would hope, that insured people were paying less for health services. And this was true for curative care, for antenatal, and for delivery. And these findings held true even when we adjusted using the propensity score matching. So in some policy implications from this, in looking at the predictors of enrollment, we saw a really clear relationship between increase in wealth and increase in enrollment. So there still is a concern that despite the fact that there are supposed to be some exemptions for the poor, this doesn't seem to be happening, at least from our data. So this is something that maybe, there might be different ways to look at exemptions. And what I've read is that it really, in reality, only about 2% of the population is being exempt for being indigent, and it could even be that some districts, maybe everybody in the district is relatively a lot worse off than another district. So there might be some ways to look at changing that structure for exemptions. We did find that the insurance is very effective at reducing out-of-pocket expenditures for both curative and maternal care. And, we did also find, though, that insurance is a little less effective at increasing rates of facility deliveries. So this is something we're going to be looking at a little bit more and investigating a bit further. I will note there's been some important policy changes recently that may also affect some of these indicators moving forward. The government did decide to provide maternal health coverage for free for all pregnant women, and that was effective just this past July. And this will provide free coverage for the entire pregnancy up to about 6 weeks postpartum, I believe. And they also are going to sort of de-link children from their parents. And so as of September, all children up to the age of 18 will now be exempt from paying premiums, regardless of whether or not their parents are enrolled. So that would, that could make a major major impact as well. And then finally, as I mentioned, family planning is not included in the current package, and there is a proposal to begin including at least the long-term methods, the more expensive and the more effective methods into the benefits package, because as it is now, there's actually sort of a marginal incentive now to have children versus to present to use family planning to prevent pregnancy. And so this actually could have some pretty significant cost implications for the government by adding this maternal health coverage. So I think I'll just leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And let's move on to Pakistan now. Our next speaker is Dr. Irfan Ahmed. He is the country health advisor for PLAN, an NGO, PVO, in Pakistan. And his experience, let me get the mouse working, and his experience